Hello, my name is Marlene, and I'd like to welcome you to Vegan Nation. Vegan Nation is an informational program featuring vegan music, news, events, and interviews about the vegan evolution revolution happening worldwide, manifesting a paradigm of peace, justice, freedom, liberation, health, wellness, and sustainability. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station nor its management. Vegan Nation has been on air since January 2015. Much thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. I am very thrilled and very happy and very honored that we are joined by Scott. Scott is a peace pilgrim, a vegan peace pilgrim, also known as the Numinous Nomad. And he has joined us on Vegan Nation. Back, I think it was 2019, we talked about his vegan peace pilgrim walk from Stuttgart, Germany.
Right.
Yeah, to Chattanooga. So we'll have a little recap of that. And then his continued peace pilgrim walk in the United States, as well as his work as a forest gardener. Welcome, Scott. Thank you very much for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Marlene, yay. I'm glad to finally be here again. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. I think the last time we spoke was 2023. When
I think that's right.
Yeah, arrived in Chattanooga, and now you're up in Pier Cove, Western Michigan, on Lake Michigan. So thank you, Scott.
Right on. Where shall we start?
Let's see. We ended our conversation that you had done your walk from Stuttgart, Germany, to the coast of Spain, I think, right? And then you got across the ocean.
That's right.
Then you walked from the east coast of the U.S. to Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Brooklyn down to Chattanooga to finish the walk. That was, I finished that walk in late September of 2019.
Okay, yes. And for those who don't know, that your vegan peace pilgrim walk, that you're walking without money, without, I think it was without even IDs, and
that's
only
correct.
Accepting vegan food.
And only accepting food when it's offered. I never ask for it. Yeah, so that those are kind of the rules I set up when I do these peace walks. And just because, you know, the more dramatic you make a walk, the more people pay attention, you know. That's basically it. I'm not a masochist. You know, I didn't want it to be terrible. But, you know, you the more dramatic an event, the more people pay attention. And it got some attention. And, you know, every time I did come across someone who heard what I was doing and wanted to buy me food, and they were always so excited to do so. It was so neat to see. You know, I would always say, okay, as long as it's plant-based, I'm hungry. I'll eat it. And they're like, oh, what if it's not plant-based? I say, well, I won't eat it. And they would say, but you're really hungry. And I say, yeah, but I would rather go hungry than harm my friends. And that always opened the door to a really powerful conversation because it was not hypothetical. It was real. I was right in front of them hungry. And I would rather go hungry than harm an animal. And I think that really got through to some people. So that was powerful. That was a good thing.
Well, I think your entire peace pilgrim walk is fascinating and very courageous. And one of the things that really strikes me is that the image that, whether it's authorities, which I'd like to hear a little bit about that, but whether it's authorities or just the general public who see you and might have a stereotype that, you know, of, you know, drug addict or something like that in here, being so surprised that here you are deeply philosophical in doing this to help spread message of peace, peace and harmony and generosity on earth.
Among all beings, not just humans. Yes. That was interesting. You know, I'm a bigger guy. I mean, I'm not bulky, but I'm tall. I'm almost 6'6". And, you know, when you do these walks, you know, you don't always get to shower. So you're kind of burly. That, of course, put some people off. And they were surprised that I just smiled and was, you know, kind of quiet and very not offensive, very not aggressive, and never asked for anything. And that demeanor allowed for the conversations that I did have with people to get pretty deep pretty quickly. It was very powerful. It was very powerful. It was very difficult. You know, I was older when I did that walk, and I'm older now still, which is why this last walk I did after I left Chattanooga, which we can talk about, did not go as well, which eventually got me to where I am today. So that's kind of how the story evolved. We can talk about that if you want.
Yes, yes, because I want to really focus on your work as a forest gardener, because that is, but I do want to hear a little bit more about this, especially going from Chattanooga, Tennessee to Indiana. And I'm still very curious right. about the ID thing, just because, I mean, it's one thing traveling without any money and only accepting food when it's offered and when it's plant-based food. I mean, that's something in itself. But I'm also so curious because I see this world becoming more and more totalitarian, and this whole idea of digital IDs and facial mm-hmm. recognition and on about the whole AI takeover of humanity. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. If you're not carrying ID, like what ID. Happens? What happens with that?
Well, that's been a theme even way back when I did my very first peace walk in 2011. I walked from Chattanooga to Miami. Pardon me. I've been doing chainsawing recently. I've had chainsaw dust in my throat, making my forest garden, which we'll talk about later. But, you know, regularly I would get stopped by police. And almost always they were astounded at what I was doing. I think they had expected the worst, quote unquote, which is not really that bad. What is bad about being a vagrant? What is bad about being homeless in this economy? There's nothing criminal about that, but there's the stigma attached to it. And all of the police who encounter me, which was in 2011 and 2019 and in 2023, they were all astounded at what I was doing, and they all ended up being moved in one way or another to help me, which was very, very interesting and pleasant to see. You know, I don't really agree with most of the police tactics we're seeing today. I really am a staunch opponent of all forms of authoritarianism and police brutality and police overreach. And underneath all of that, these guys and women are human, and they're deep down good and decent people. And I believe, that's just my personal belief. And the ones who are not being that way have just kind of lost their way. But when they were exposed to someone who is just out there selflessly trying to do good for humans and animals, they all, even the ones who are really gruff, just could not help themselves, but extend some measure of kindness to help me get to where I was going. It's very interesting.
Yes, very interesting. Thank you. Yeah, so now I'd like to hear about your new path as a forest gardener, which is actually an old path because you've done it also in the past. But let's hear about what's happening in Pierre Cove in western Michigan on Lake Michigan.
Yeah, wonderful place. Just so beautiful here, which I didn't really know. I went to college in Michigan on the other side of the state a long time ago, and never knew that Michigan was so beautiful as far as the nature goes. Anyway, I did another peace walk after Chattanooga, and I was going to walk in a big loop from Chattanooga to Chicago to New York to Miami and back to Chattanooga. That was the goal. And I thought, no problem. You know, I've done it before. I'll just do it again. And that walk kind of ended because I got injured. And we don't need to go into that. I mean, it just happens. You know, it's a very physical task, and sometimes injuries happen. So I got injured on that walk. And between my 2019 walk and the 2023 walk, I had stayed in Chattanooga, and I had worked on my parents' land tending their woods, because their woods was overrun with dead trees, and no one had ever cared for it, and it was overgrown because it had been clear cut. And you know, when any time humans clear cut a forest, nature heals itself chaotically and rapidly. And it becomes kind of unhealthy and choked out and stagnant until over hundreds of years, you know, the species can figure out how they're going to regrow. And so I had this calling to help Mother Nature get past that wound, to help Mother Nature heal herself, by kind of clearing away the stuff that she wanted to do in 200 years, I was going to try to do for her in two. And so I got pretty good at that, kind of feeling which trees to cut and what to do with the dead stuff. And I got pretty good at it somehow, just intuitively. And so then when I did this last walk in 23 and I got hurt, I made it to Chicago, where I had some friends who had some land here in Pierre Cove. And they knew that I tended the woods. They didn't know what it looked like when I got going. They just thought, oh, we'll do him a favor. He's hurt. We'll let him heal in Michigan and take care of our land a little bit. And that was my thought too. I would just clear around the house and make it look nice, and then I would move on. That was the original thought. Well, you know, and I got here, and the land had also been clear cut. When Chicago burned in the 1890s, all of the timber from Chicago all the way up the coast to northern Michigan was all clear cut and floated down to Chicago to rebuild Chicago. So all of this land 130 years ago had been clear cut. So the land was just overgrown like you wouldn't believe. And then as I started to clear it more and more, I would just open up these amazing trees I would find, these beautiful vistas, and I just couldn't stop. And so I've been working pretty much almost every day without break since May of 24. I've been here and I've worked every day, and I've turned it into a peace park inadvertently. I've made paths through the woods, and I've placed benches for people to sit and reflect by beautiful trees. And now already, even though it's not done, hundreds of locals know about it and visit it almost every day. It's really cool. Yeah, it's been a kind of a real labor of love, and I feel really blessed to be able to do it. I've put videos of my progress up on my YouTube channel, right? So people can actually see what we're talking about. Maybe we can link that somehow so people could see it if they want to.
Yes, I'll put that on my website, vegansradio.com. Cool. Yeah, cool. For your interview, which is the airing is January 20th, 2026.
Right on.
And yeah, it's just amazing. And I have to say, I want to go into the detail of your work with it. Because when you describe digging the ditches, whether you're making the place for the stones for the meditation centers or any of the work, and you're talking about wheelbarrowfuls of rocks and dirt, and oh my God, I think, that is so much work.
It is, when I look back and look at it, it is somewhat Herculean. I don't quite understand how I've been able to do it, but it's possible. It feels when I'm really working in this particular land that I'm getting a boost of energy from the land. And I know that sounds a little hokey, but when I'm working on this land and trying to help it do what I intuitively feel it wants to do, and I see how all the animals respond to that and all the trees respond to that, I just somehow can throw a lot of wood. At my age, it doesn't really make any sense. I'm very thankful. I'm not questioning it. I accept the gift, you know, and I love the work. It is so much fun. And it's fun to see the animals love it because they obviously do. And it's fun to see the humans who visit love it.
Yes. And speaking of more peaceful, I'd love to hear the story about the deer and also your conversations with humans who just have been raised in this global non-vegan culture, and how this shift into a new way of relating as humans to other animals.
I hope it has that help. Yeah, that's been really powerful. And again, not intended. This has all happened organically. I thought I was kind of in the middle of nowhere and wouldn't have opportunities to do vegan outreach. You know, animals, in my opinion, are equally worthy beings as any human. And it's been a beautiful joy to see how the animals just obviously love what I'm doing. And they have no fear around me, even when I was first starting. I mean, I would be flying away with the chainsaw, cutting up dead trees and making these critter piles, I call them, for the rodents, and, you know, letting the trees not compete as inefficiently with each other so they can grow more beautifully. And I would look up often, and there would be these deer laying down like 30 feet from me, just watching me work. Now, part of that was because I was the buffet man. Word got around. Deer love the sweet leaves of sassafras and maple trees. And the land had been overgrown with those two species. So I was cutting a lot of sassafras and a lot of maple. So the deer, they would hear my saw. And, you know, a bunch of them would come and sit nearby, some real close, some on the edge of the woods. And then they would wait for me to get done. And I would just say, okay, dinner served. And I would walk away to work somebody else, and they would come out and eat. That was always really cool.
I like it, the buffet man. So I have another category to add to your name.
Yes,
Scott, the forest gardener, the vegan peace pilgrim, and now the buffet man.
So the deer buffet, you know, in the positive sense, you know, letting deer eat, not eating deer.
Right.
Which has been another real positive is, you know, Michigan is a very hunting rich culture. Unfortunately, we still hunt in this day and age. And people in Michigan, no one has to kill a beautiful deer in order to live a healthy, long life. That's just nutritional facts. But it's part of the culture, you know. So I've had at least 8 hunters, probably more, come right up to the door after me doing all this work, because the land is opened up now. So there's no ticks. It's gorgeous. And a hunter could hypothetically just immerse him or herself, easily see deer, easily kill deer. And so they would knock on the door and they would say, hey, hi, I'm a bow hunter. Or I'm a hunter. And just, you know, I figure it's not a problem, but I just want to ask permission to hunt on your land. And I would say, oh, heavens, no. This is a peace sanctuary. And this is an animal safe haven. And this is why. And then the conversation would always, we would have long conversations and they would give all of the reasons. Well, if we don't cull the population of deer, they're going to starve. And I said, well, I've polled 1,000 deer and every single one of them says they would rather have the possibility of starving than get shot in the head. And they would pause and they would say, oh, yeah. And so we would have all these conversations. And at the end, you know, I was always amicable and kind. And I would say, you know what, do me a favor, will you? You know, the next time you go hunting, leave your gun at home and just take a camera. Just for me, just one time. And almost all of them said they would. So I don't know what good that did, but I like to believe it did something. Now words got around, and of course I've posted these beautiful no hunting signs, which are very beautifully phrased. I had them made custom. So they don't just say no hunting, they say, this is a sacred space for all beings, human and non-human alike. Please act accordingly, thank you. And I have that posted all around the perimeter of the property. So anytime a hunter would come on, they would see this sign and they would, you know, they had the no hunting and then that sentence, which also might do some good, you know, cause some reflection.
Listening to Scott, a forest gardener and a vegan peace pilgrim, Scott is joining us from Pear Cove, Western Michigan, near Lake Michigan. You tuned into Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene in Massachusetts. We'll be taking a short break and then we'll continue our conversation with Scott. We're listening to the Deer Song, D-E-E-R, Deer Song by Will Tuttle. Welcome back from the break. Thank you very much for joining us on Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Molly Nair in Worcester, Massachusetts. We're continuing our conversation with Scott, a forest gardener and a vegan peace pilgrim. Yes, thank you. And I'm still fascinated that when you got there at Pear Cove, Western Michigan, that you thought, oh, you just might be clearing the land around the house.
Yeah.
Instead, here you are, forest gardener of 25 acres.
Well, 52, actually.
Oh.
I mean, I have actually significantly cleansed about 25 of them in the last year and a half, but there's 52 total. And I plan on intentionally leaving large chunks of them wild on purpose, because that adds to the form and the dance of the whole thing, you know. But I've got about a solid, if I really go for it and stay healthy and get some help with the weather and go one more year, I'll have three more sets of videos, one in the spring in May, and I'll do another set in August, and I'll do another set in November. And by November of this year, I think phase one, at least, will be complete. It's now set up so that nature by herself will make it more beautiful without any need for human work at all. And it'll just get more and more beautiful over the next 200, 300, 400 years. That's kind of how I'm painting, with the end in mind, you know.
Will you please tell us about the labyrinth? Yeah.
I'm friends with the owners of this land. They're very gracious. So they both have said, look, you know, you're doing great work here. We had no idea. And go ahead and tell the public they can come walk on our land. And so it is now officially open to the public, which is a real gift from these lovely people. So anyway, the woman of the house mentioned one day that she wanted a labyrinth. And she knew that I had built labyrinths before when I was in Europe. That used to be one of my jobs. I used to build labyrinths. the Seven Circuit Labyrinth. It's called a Cretan Labyrinth, C-R-E-T-A-N. If you look that up, you'll see it. They're all over the world. Anyway, I knew that I kind of wanted a labyrinth on the land because they're very meditative. They're very peace-inducing, I found. They kind of fit the whole vibe of what I was doing here anyway. And I was wandering around saying, okay, it needs to be kind of a circular glen, and it needs to be about this size, and it needs to be near the house, but not too near the house. And then a sunbeam comes down, and there was only one, in all 52 acres, there was only one spot that fit. And there it was right in front of me when I asked. It was the weirdest thing. And so I built this labyrinth in August of 24. So it's over a year old. And was originally going to place fist-sized stones all around its perimeter to mark it, but I couldn't find any fist-sized stones. So I hand-dug an 8-inch trench along all the lines of the labyrinth, like a little 6-inch wide trench that's 8 inches deep. And then I just got ordered like umpteen tons of river stone and shovel by shovel filled all those trenches in, which is perfect because it's maintenance free because it's so deep. Even the deer, when they walk across it and kick a few stones away, it stays intact. And it is as beautiful now as it was when I made it, you know, coming up on a year and a half ago. And the community loves it. They come to see it all the time and walk it. It's really cool.
I also love how it's close to the public path from the Pierre Cove Ravine. Will you talk about that a little bit? Yeah.
Yes, there is. Before I started to work on the private land trails of my friend's land, the 52 acres, they had bought this land 15 years ago. And one of the great selling points was a really famous landscape architect through the 1920s had made this his summer home here. And when he passed, he left this beautiful 70-acre L-shaped piece of property through this gorgeous ravine that he had repopulated after the clear cutting for the Chicago fire in the early 1900s or the late 1890s. And he had planted all these beautiful trees because he was a genius arborist. And he dedicated this, it's called a Pierre Cove Ravine Trust, I think is what it's called. And it's open to the public as a public trust. And so that land is in a huge L all the way around the border of the land I'm on. And there were already trails there maintained by a nonprofit committee that maintains that land for the public. And now the trails I'm making are connected to those trails. And so they're all, it's an interconnected kind of nature sanctuary, which is really neat. It's gorgeous. It's really beautiful.
It is very, very beautiful.
There's a public beach only about a quarter of a mile away. Because if you look right, you can see Lake Michigan down the road, the short road I'm at the end of, you know, very, very close to Lake Michigan. And on Lake Michigan, there's a public beach, the Pierre Cove Public Beach. And it's a small little beach, but the hamlet nearby had decided it needed renovating for the public. And I had frequently, before the renovation started, gone down and at time to time to rest and watch the sunset because, you know, it's western facing. So it's gorgeous. You sit there and you look out at Lake Michigan, which looks like the ocean. It's humongous. It's unbelievably humongous. And you see the sun set into the ocean, which it looks like the ocean. And I had always sat on this concrete bench that was really, really nice. It was massive. It was a massive concrete bench with a connected to a massive concrete footer, kind of halfway up the dune, looking over Meadow Lake, Michigan. When they started construction, I went down and passed by and I talked to the head guy there, the contractor, head contractor, young fellow, really nice guy. And I had said, hey man, what's gonna happen with those benches? He says, they're gonna break, we move them, we're just gonna throw them away and replace them with modern benches. And I was like, oh, bummer. How about we make a trade? And I don't, because they needed funds from the public to finish the project. So I said, how about I donate some money? And about the money thing, normally I don't have any money, right? And I always work for free. My friends, partly because they're just sweet people and worry about me, and partly because I don't think they wanted the annoyance of having to regularly send me food through the mail, you know, because I got to eat to work for free. They had demanded that I take a small salary. So I had this money. So I'm trying to do good with the money, right? And find ways to give it away. So one of the ways I gave it away was I said, hey, how about I trade a donation to your project and you try to get this bench next to my labyrinth and I'll pay you for it. The guy said, no, I'll do that for free. That's a cool idea.
And yeah. Speaking of the skid steer and the skid steer operator, I also love the story how he brought the bench from Lake Michigan through the woods.
He did. He was able to pick up this bench and keep it from breaking. And watching him work was remarkable. He's very talented. And it was really difficult to get it set it down in this stone base I had made, foundation I had made next to the labyrinth. And he got it level and oriented right. It was remarkable. He was remarkable. And he was very proud of himself. And that inspired him to joyfully move the boulder then a few months later to the Zen Garden with the same machine. A skid steer, one of those forklift things on tractor treads, you know? So that was cool.
Yeah, very, very nice. And again, our listeners who are interested, you can go to Scott's YouTube channel to see his many videos for the seasons, the spring, the summer, and the fall of this, I'll say 25 acres, but like you said, it's 52 in full, but yeah. The 25 acres that you've been working as a forest gardener. Yeah, wow. Really great. Thank you, Scott. And I love your conversations with people who come by to sit at the tea garden who might not have heard of veganism, and hear that you are a vegan and you engage in conversation with them about veganism. Thank you, Scott. Thank you very much. We're coming to a close in the interview for today. What additional messages would you like to leave with our listeners and any of your internet sites or your email?
That's kind of you. Generally, I mean, we as vegans know what it's about. And I just would encourage people, including myself, to every day really think about trying to do something for the animals. This is a very serious travesty that's happening, and it really does. It's not overstated to say it needs to stop. So whether that is graffitiing walls, whether that is putting stickers on meat and dairy and egg products in supermarkets, and you can get those online, whether that is talking to your friends, whether that is refusing to sit at non-vegan meals, etc., protesting, doing Anonymous for the Voiceless is a wonderful organization that does wonderful outreach, social outreach. But I guess just let's all try to do something actively. As far as contacting me goes, it's really easy. If you just type in the spelling, the unusual spelling of my first name, S-C-A-U-G-H-D as in Dora, T as in Tom, S-C-A-U-G-H-D-T, I'm the only one on the internet. And you immediately get my website, which has my email address on it, rediscoveringpeace, all one word, @gmail.com. And you get my Facebook page, which is an archive of past work. And you get my Instagram, and you get my YouTube channel and my Rumble channel, and the whole deal. So that's the easiest way to find me.
Wonderful. Thank you, Scott. Thank you for all you do. And thank you very much for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Marlene, it was an honor. I'm so thankful you asked me to be here. Thank you very much.
And much thanks to our listeners for tuning in to Vegan Nation. Please join us again next week at the same time. You can hear this program again at vegansradio.com. This is Marlene, Massachusetts, wishing you a lovely, peaceful, joyous day.